As I state over and over and over again, ad nauseum, all points of view, all phenomena, and all phenomena are points of view. No matter what they are included and contained within awareness. And the only way to realize that, realize the fullness of that, is to take that initial step of realization that all points of view are included and contained within awareness. So, you know, there's no special state anyone needs to get into. Just saying to yourself, all points of view are included and contained within awareness, is realization that that is so. It becomes more and more obvious over time. One of the ways for it to become more obvious over time is that when the points of view come up, stop elaborating them and keep it simple. It's just like we can have all kinds of grand and wonderful insights about the great reality that are incredibly descriptive, but it's very easy to get lost in those descriptions. It's extraordinarily easy to get lost in those descriptions. So the Great Freedom Teaching keeps it impeccably simple, but does not oversimplify. And there is a huge distinction between the two. And I'll give you an example of that distinction. To oversimplify would be to say that the realization of ultimate reality is that all points of view are included and contained within awareness. But that is not the totality of the realization. That is the initial realization. And then the wonder of that unfolds once that realization is had. Once that realization is evident, then it becomes more and more obvious that all the points of view are not only included and contained within awareness, but all points of view are that awareness. They are the basic space of that awareness. That it is one wholly positive basic space. That it is crystal clear, like this crystal ball, absolutely flawless. And that its light, its clear light, has no origin. So the clear light of awareness has no origin. An example of light that has an origin is the sun. So the clear light of our own awareness is what illuminates the basic space of all points of view. And that's all that never ever needs to be realized. Once that is realized, then one taps directly into the emanation of benefit that is the definition of complete enlightenment. Complete enlightenment equals complete benefit. Great freedom equals great benefit. So the two go together. They're absolutely inseparable. That's always been the case. So now I will draw another distinction between oversimplification and simplification of the reality of being totally free. An oversimplification is to say that all points of view are a dream. All points of view are a mirage. All points of view are an hallucination, an illusion, like a cloud castle in the air, an echo, whatever it is. There is a vast and significant distinction between stating that, which is an oversimplification, and that all points of view are like a mirage, like a dream. When we say something is like a mirage or like a dream, we don't take a position about whether it exists or not. And that is very, very key. Because great freedom is entirely beyond all intellectual speculation of such things as existent or not. So when we say something is like a mirage or like a dream, it is vividly apparent, but without an independent origin. Vividly apparent, but without truly existing. So both are the case, and they're inseparable. So with this, we realize a lucid emptiness in everything. But it isn't an emptiness that is an inert void. It is an emptiness that is lucid, that is wholly positive, that is naturally present and entirely responsive. So you see, all these things are the case about each point of view. Not an oversimplification like everything is a dream, everything is an illusion, so I'll just do whatever I want. So you see, this is a huge distinction, a very huge distinction. The great tradition of enlightened human culture is very, very old, and it is believed that there was a time when everyone was enlightened. All of humankind was enlightened. So, you know, knowing that that is the case, we can know that that's the case right now. Because what the truth of what is timeless. So as there really is no past, present, or future in wholly positive basic space, whatever is always is. Do you see what I'm saying? When we learn to look at everything from the angle of vision of point of view, we can't see that. We can't see that everything that is always is. We can't see that enlightenment is already accomplished. It seems like it has to be some kind of goal in the future. It seems like it has to be have some kind of cause and effect relationship, that we have to somehow, through a system or process of causality, become who we are. But we'll never become who we are through those means. We might get some notion of who we are, we might get some idea of freedom, but we won't be entirely free. How many people here have seen The Matrix? Oh. Kay, you're the only one who hasn't seen it?
Yeah. I think I may have seen part of it on television.
Oh, I just saw it about a month ago, so, Because everywhere I went, people kept mentioning The Matrix, so I thought, well, I'll see it. And so I watched all three. I guess they're three individual films, right? So, you know, the good news is that we are The Matrix. There's no one trying to get us. When things are put together from point of view, you see allegories of point of view. There's the opposition of good and evil, and good and evil are trying to duke it out with each other. So, you know, there are many films that are kind of about that, like The Matrix, What's the Bleep, or What the Bleep, and other films like that. Now, the beauty of those films is that it points to a reality beyond everything we can see. The dismal failure of the films is they don't tell us how to get there. You know, so we're left with this carrot or gold ring dangling in front of us, like, oh, I'm Neo, and I can fly through the sky, I can have conflicts with zillions of people and defeat them all through magical means. You know, I can believe in myself and tap into all the power of everything that is. And, you know, it has a very strong resonance. Allegory and myth are like that because they speak directly to who we are. But the greatest allegory is this magnificent display that pours out of our own awareness. And that's really the meaning of The Matrix. All of that is included within us. There's no one out to get us. That's why I emphasize, give up your right to be a victim of all these points of view. There's no one out to get us. There never has been. There are no parents out to get us, no governments, no nothing, you know. But until we realize that, we can't do anything about the actual situation of the world. So, you know, In The Matrix, what is portrayed is that all of this is beyond our control in a way, and only a superhuman being can realize this great reality. And it points out as well that we might feel sort of free within the matrix, but it's really all part of the matrix. It's an anomaly of the matrix. For example, an anomaly of the matrix would be everything is a dream, everything is an illusion. That's an anomaly of the matrix. That's not freedom as the matrix. So, you know, what happens throughout the film is that Neo, in the form of all these things going on, Mr. Smith and Mr. Anderson, he confronts all of his points of view in the same way the Buddha confronted Mara sitting under the Bodhi tree. But all these things are just his own images, you know. So this is the case for all of us. The matrix, it's within us. It's not something out to get us, and it never has been. But, you know, it's a graphic portrayal of how our energy is totally zapped if we live from point of view. And all of this sounds really incredible as a general philosophy, but when we take account of our points of view, when we know exactly what our points of view are and how they've affected our life, then we really grow to understand how much suffering they cause us. So those of you who participated in Inquiry 1 yesterday really got to see that. You really got to see the effective point of view in a very particular way, not just as a general philosophy, but just how pervasive it is. That once we focus our awareness on the points of view rather than resting naturally as awareness, we get completely lost in the matrix of point of view. And all of our energy is zapped by that. Just like, you know, the little babies they showed hooked up in the, that were feeding the matrix. In the same way, you know, all of our energy, our natural energy, our natural occurring responsiveness, our naturally occurring benefit, our naturally occurring powers that are so immense that they're beyond imagining, we're completely blind to all of them. It's as though we're born congenitally blind and we'll never see once we put the blinders on of all these points of view as being something in and of themselves. So, you know, what does Neo do in the Matrix? Well, no matter what's going on, he doesn't buy into the trip. He doesn't buy into anything going on in the Matrix, even if it's an anomaly of the Matrix that looks like it has something to do with awakening, like the Oracle or whatever. He never goes into any of that. Rather, he believes in his own true nature. He stays with that throughout. No matter what's going on with all the points of view, he rests in the nature of his being, and from that nature of his being, he has this immensity of power, of magnificence that blesses everything. So, you know, this is the case for every one of us. It's an allegory that points directly to who we are. And this, as I've mentioned to you before, was very obvious to me in my own life, because when I woke up, I really didn't have any ideas about what awakening was or is. And as soon as I did, I had the capacity to understand everything. You know, I could read any sacred text from any tradition in the world, and the first time I understood it completely, could give a talk on it, write a commentary on it, interpret it in a way that could be understood by everyone today. And I had never studied religion or spirituality or sacred texts or comparative religions or anything like that. So, you know, That's evidence of the immensity of what is the case for everyone. That we really, our true nature really is a true nature of no more learning. That there's nothing more to learn. That basic space equals no more learning. All of the learning is already the case. And as I stated the other day, you know, everything is included within us. So that when we learn something and we take it to be something that's outside of us, that we're gathering into us, it's all a matter of perception. As all points of view are already included and contained within awareness, we always already know what we know. If we make up a story about how we know what we know by saying, oh, I learned it from a book, that's just a story. So when none of these things can we really come to terms with unless we rest naturally at the origin of each perception. We can't really get what I'm talking about here unless we do that. We can't ever figure it out. Figure it out is not a mantra. It cannot be figured out. The great mantra, the secret mantra, and that term has been used for thousands and thousands of years, secret mantra, and the secret mantra is always the same. Rest naturally without seeking anything. Rest is best. So, you know, this is a reality of our own being, the ground of our own being, where we don't need to contrive anything at all. When we rest naturally, it's totally uncontrived. And all of our senses, so to speak, that only exist by virtue of awareness, naturally settle into their own place of complete rest. So, you know, some of these things portrayed in the Matrix have been real for many people and are real for a few people today. But, you know, it's just when I realized who I am and the immensity of that became obvious to me, and suddenly I was able to do all these things I'd never been able to do. Plus, I'd spent a lifetime greatly efforting to do all kinds of things and accomplished a great deal but never felt any fulfillment. And then all of a sudden I was fulfilled and I realized something about the nature of human life that was completely immense. And, you know, I realized that within each of us, we have these naturally occurring emanations of benefit. And that when we rest naturally, it naturally comes to us how we are to be of benefit. It's absolutely perfectly clear to us how we are to be of benefit. And then the potency and the magnificence of that in terms of the powers associated with it just are naturally present. They're absolutely present, whatever they are. So, you know, whether it's being able to fly through space or walk through solid walls or knowledge of all sacred treatises or whatever it is, it becomes obvious. So, you know, when we emphasize our innate strengths, gifts, and talents in the Great Freedom Teaching, we're not emphasizing those things about us that are points of view of trying to build an identity. What we're emphasizing is what's naturally occurring as our own being. We're each here to be of tremendous benefit. And the way that we realize the power to do so is through rest. Isn't that amazing? It's really amazing. So, keep it simple. Keep it simple, and the great reality just becomes more and more obvious. Keep it totally simple. Rest naturally without seeking anything. That means when we're aware of an experience, it's awareness that's primary in the experience. The experience is only because of awareness. that means that the experience is awareness. So, you know, no matter what the experience is, just by virtue of our experiencing, we are aware. So, you know, there's nothing to prove, no state to get to. We already are who we are. And rest naturally without describing anything. We don't need to get into a story. We don't need to create a fiction about every point of view we have. It's just naturally present as part of the grand display, a wonderful vibration of energy, like the ripples in a pond, inseparable from the pond. And when we do keep it simple, we really do realize who we are. I'm not talking about this as a philosophy, but it's something that's real in myself, and it's also real in countless people I know. So rest is best. I can't convince anyone to let go of their concepts about everything that's going on. All I can do is share my own experience and point out to you that you and I are equal, that's all. And then if you are moved to commit to keeping it so simple that there's no need to describe everything that's going on, you can realize that all of these points of view, no matter what they are, just like the rearrangement of the alphabet continuously within basic space. It's the basic space of who you are. It's dynamic energy is all the letters or characters of whatever alphabet you happen to use. And just because those are arranged in all these ways, like are set out on Wikipedia or the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language or whatever it is, all those arrangements still are only the dynamic energy of awareness, no matter what they are. So why get caught up in making them into something? Why squander an entire lifetime depleting oneself of a life of total ease? A life of total ease, immense power, and magnificent benefit. What could be better? You know, all the things that we want as human beings, intimate relationships, satisfying work, a sense of well-being, permanent well-being, inherent happiness, all of these things that we strive so hard to get, they're already naturally present. And they all come about through natural rest. It's, you know, it's just like before I woke up, one of the things that I was really into understanding was psychology, and I knew quite a bit about it, and philosophy too. At a very early age, I'd become intrigued with ways to try to fix up life. And none of those things ever availed nothing, anything. They availed nothing. No thing. They availed absolutely nothing. There was no way I could rearrange all the points of view into some kind of satisfactory framework. No way whatsoever. And I tried everything. And you know, I had also prayed from the beginning of my life. Every single day I had prayed. Every single day I had prayed from the beginning of my life. But when it got right down to it, the prayers didn't work either. They had provided me some kind of temporary comfort. Well, the way I really looked at it is I'm covering my bases. If I pray and there really is some kind of thing, you know, that I'm going to check out into, and because I pray I'm going to go to heaven or whatever, then all of my bases covered. But, you know, when I realized who I was, it was like, oh, this is so absurd, you know? It's just like changing my angle of vision a millimeter, and all of a sudden I realized that I've always seen what I see. It's so incredible. And none of these things are necessary. You know, the ultimate prayer is just to rest naturally as the ground of our being. What could be more of a prayer than that? What could be more of a prayer than everything being a prayer. That no matter what the point of view, it is a prayer. No matter what the point of view, it is a mantra. No matter what the point of view is, it is a puja. No matter what the point of view is, it is a meditation. That is complete liberation. That is complete liberation and benefit for all beings. It's just like, you know, if we do a puja to try to avoid adversity or something like that, that's great, but if we don't rest naturally while we're doing that puja, we can do pujas the rest of our life, but it will never help us avoid adversity. The only avoidance of adversity is to rest naturally in each perception. Each perception is either adverse or not. You know, it's as simple as that. But, you know, also, there aren't any limits on this, and I really want to emphasize this, how magnificent we are as human beings, how we really do abide as that which is so potent and magnificent, that we have such immensity of power to affect the situation of humankind in the world, and it all comes about through natural rest. So any of these things that you've ever seen or heard exhibited, powers as, or siddhis as they're called in Hinduism, magical feats as they're called in Buddhism, all of these things are already the case for everyone. They're already the case for everyone. As long as we say, well, that one can manifest objects or have knowledge of sacred treatises or walk on water or walk through walls or fly through space or whatever it is, then we've created a point of view that seems to have nothing to do with us. But all of these things, magical feats, cities, powers, whatever they are, they're all rooted in our own awareness. They're all rooted in our own awareness. And when we rest naturally, we realize the significance of what that really is. So now, you know, if all of a sudden you find yourself flying through space or walking through walls, I'd suggest you not tell anyone about it. Because if you do, there are going to be a lot of people who either want to kill you or use you to further their aims. So, you know, it's really important in understanding that these immense powers are already accomplished to realize them and use them for aims that are extremely worthwhile. Like, what could be more worthwhile than the great freedom of all beings? Now, there's a power worth having, you know, the power to liberate. There's a power worth having. Because as we all realize who we are, then together we all exhibit our power to emanate benefit for the whole. So you see, as long as we say, oh, well, only that special one can do these things, we limit our realization of who we are. Any questions?
You said you were suddenly able to do many things. Is that too personal to give examples?
Well, one of the things, as I've mentioned, is that I had knowledge of all treatises. And and other things, too, but much more mundane than that.
You mentioned that there is evidence that everyone had complete knowledge and total freedom at one point. Mm-hmm. What happened? That we all fell under a cloud.
Well, there's been lots of speculation about that. No one really knows, but the one that I've read that seems most plausible is that there were catastrophic events that occurred. At one time, there was an enormous civilization that stretched from the Himalayas to the Mediterranean Sea. And when the Rig Veda was first discovered, which is the oldest religious document in India, it mentioned two rivers, the Indus River and the Sarasvati River, and it pinpointed their location. And for many, many years, historians believed that everything in the Rig Veda was a fiction because these rivers didn't exist anywhere. But then with the development of laser photography from space, it was found that under the Thar Desert in Rajasthan that stretches over into Pakistan, that there were these two rivers that could be seen with the laser photography under the desert. And not only were there rivers, but there was a civilization that stretched all along these rivers. So they started digging, you know, the archaeologists, and found these incredible advanced civilizations along these rivers. So what is believed is that the catastrophic events that created the Himalayas, the ever-growing Himalayas, that those created cataclysmic changes. I think just a couple of years ago it was that an entire city was found in the Arabian Sea that had been submerged all at once in some kind of catastrophic event. So that sounds plausible. But who knows about these things? You know, who really knows?
Some teachers tell that if everyone was enlightened completely, it would be the end of the universe. I never could get a hold of that. It didn't make sense to me.
Who knows?
Do you have any idea what, how that's supposed to work?
No, all I know is everyone's already enlightened right now. There are many ways to describe what's going on with awareness, but it's just so important to keep it totally simple, but again, not oversimplify it. When we keep it simple, we allow ourselves the direct realization of who we are by beginning with simply understanding that all our points of view are included within our awareness, rather than believing that all our points of view are outside us. So that's a shift. That's a big shift. Just the mental understanding of that is a huge shift. And then when in our daily life we realize that more and more, that all these points of view really are included within our awareness, and we have the tangible accomplishment of that in our perception. In other words, we no longer see everything as outside us. And we no longer see everything as either positive, negative, or neutral. More and more, it's just all point of view. It all is awareness. It all is equal. And it all is us. And it all is one holy, positive, basic space. So you see, we can speculate about these things and think about them forever. But unless we actually realize the full evidence of it, in our own perception, it remains a mental understanding. And there's no way to really tap into the emanation of benefit until we really realize ourselves to be the clear light of the basic space of everything. Just like this. This is what we already are. But who could figure out that, you know? It's just like you were saying last night, Michael, that you had this shift all of a sudden, and then it was amazing that you hadn't seen it because it's just so obvious. Yeah. So So if we're looking for some amazing thing, you know, like some kind of state we're going to be in, and that'll cause us to live in a certain way and cut us off from our family, our country, everything we know, then it's just more point of view. We don't have to wear a special costume, bend ourselves into any position. This is any costume is fine. Any position we're in is fine. And you know, this isn't something that, this is what has been the epitome teaching throughout all of human history. It's not something new. It really isn't something new. The Buddha said standing, sitting, walking, whatever it is, rest naturally. The Hindu tantras and sutras say the same thing. The epitome teachings say rest is best. That is sadhana. That is true sadhana. Sadhana means liturgy, you know, so it's like the liturgy of living, the actual liturgy of living. And when we rest naturally, it's the immediacy of every perception. What could be more of a liturgy than that? You know, it's the liturgy that is pervasive of everything. So when we take any of these things and make them into something that's in some kind of little tiny cubbyhole, like sadhana, liturgy, mantra, prayer, meditation, if it doesn't include all of life, then it isn't non-dual. So the meditation that is complete meditative stability in each perception, the mantra, the word mantra means that which soothes the mind. When we rest naturally in the immediacy of each perception, then the mind is soothed because we have begun with the end of mind. By resting naturally, we begin with the end of mind. We realize that mind is just another point of view. There is no mainframe called a mind that includes all points of view.
So this would be a thoughtless state, would be the idea?
No. Everything is included. Thought is absolutely free as pure basic space. Emotions are absolutely free as pure basic space. All conduct is absolutely free as pure basic space. All sensations are absolutely free as pure basic space.
It seems to me that this energy, this luster, these points of view, and just the inherent quality of awareness, just the energy that is inherent in my awareness, the awareness. And I was just sort of getting a visual this morning. It's like you see boiling mud in that boiling mud museum or something. It's just always little.
Uh-huh.
It's like all these points of view are just like little, these endless little loops of boiling mud. And the mud's the awareness. But it seems that even in a state of awakeness, enlightenment, there's still the manifestation of the energy of your awareness to be as compassion. But it's like all these bloops, they're not just coming from everywhere, it might just be this huge singular. It's like the energy
Yes. Is
just so contained into one explosion of compassion that it's not dissipated in all these points of view.
Exactly, exactly. It's it's a wholly positive basic space with no division. And it's clear that there never has been a division. And it's true energy, so to speak. It's clear energy is compassion and wisdom. Compassion and wisdom that are already present. Omniscience. But with no one omniscient.
How does the cause of illness and disease fit into all this? I'm just trying to get my head around
When we don't realize we're already perfect, then we get sick. We get sick and die anyway. But, you know, we either see it as a point of view. When we get sick and grow old and that sort of thing, some of us here are older than others. So, you know, some of us have the real life evidence of this, you know, that we are getting old, that we get sick more, that we see death right there on the horizon. It isn't so far off anymore. You know, so that makes it very tangibly real. But you see, if we are looking at everything from point of view, we cloak ourselves in the identity of these things. Like, we get sick and we hole up inside our blanket or shawl of sickness and take ourselves to be that sickness or aging or whatever it is. But when we realize that the points of view of illness, aging, death, that they're all within us, then we don't have to put on the cloak of any of those things and take ourselves to be those things. Even if we do become ill, we're entirely free as that illness, rather than, you know, feeling like a victim of it or being overwhelmed by it. We're still entirely free. We can choose to die or not, you know. When we're free in each perception, then we're free in all perceptions, no matter what comes up. When I didn't say drop concepts. What I said is that all points of view are included and contained within our awareness. But when we focus all of our energy and attention on the concepts or points of view rather than resting as awareness, in other words, gathering all of our energy back into ourselves as awareness, then we get completely lost in all the points of view. We take them to be something real. So when we rest naturally, free in the immediacy of each perception, then we don't have to do anything. Nothing need be done, nothing need be said about what's going on. So we don't have to do anything about the concepts themselves or the points of view. They're countless and ceaseless, just like, you know, the color blue is the sky. We can't separate out the color blue from the sky. Points of view are inseparable from awareness. Awareness and points of view are one basic space, one luminous basic space. If we're trying to apply antidotes to all the points of view, to shape them into better points of view in order to wake up, we'll never wake up. If we're trying to quell negative points of view, negative behaviors, all of that, we'll never be able to do it, first of all, and we'll certainly never even be able to be awake. But when we rest naturally, there is a rightness and appropriateness in our conduct that naturally comes about. Our conduct is such that it's always as though we're before the highest judge, you know. And this is natural, so it's already present. We don't have to attempt to perfect ourselves or be virtuous. I had a lifetime of that, and it never worked. My early life I spent attempting to be virtuous and perfect and always feeling like I was falling short. I never felt either virtuous or perfect. Yet, in the rightness of the reality of who we are, just living as the ground of our being, resting naturally as the ground of our being, entirely free with whatever it is that's appearing as our awareness, there is pristine conduct that's already the case. And the way that we realize that is that for most of us, usually we realize that our positive points of view are already awareness, and we realize that our neutral points of view are already awareness. And then we're feeling totally free. Oh, I'm so awake. This feels so good. And then all of a sudden, we're bombarded by some kind of totally negative set of points of view, whatever they are. Usually it's related to whatever our pet point of view is. And when that occurs, rather than getting totally lost in it, we realize that those two are absolutely free. That they're nothing but totally free basic space. It doesn't mean we go on acting like an idiot for the rest of our lives, but we realize that all of these things we took to be negative are also pure in their own place. They're entirely pure. That is the only basis for true compassion. You see, unless we realize that about ourselves, we can't tap into that incredible benefit. It's just, you know, like Neo when he was going to the city of machines and no one had ever been there. He had to go through all this adversity and his girlfriend was killed. He had to give up everything, love, you know, sex, the whole thing. He had to see that all of it, no matter what it was always already entirely free. He had to have faith that he was more than any of that. You know, that to limit himself to any of those perceptions of anything were just that, they were limitations. But that if he took it all the way, he really tapped into the immensity of what was possible. So this is the case for each of us. And when those negative points of view come up during our process of realization becoming fully evident, then we simply rest as that too, no matter what's occurring, and it all settles perfectly into peace, total peace. But you know, it doesn't mean that we are irresponsible either. That's why it's so important to have a teacher who has integrated negative states, not just a teacher who has built up a bunch of positive states, but someone who's actually integrated all the negative states as absolutely pure basic space. They can support us immensely because, you know, it can be a time when if there isn't a teacher available, if there isn't support available, all kinds of things can happen. Lots of people can get hurt, or we can hurt ourselves too in the process. And freedom is totally free. Freedom is totally free no matter what's occurring. The starting point is to realize that all these points of view, no matter what they are included and contained within your awareness. So say you take yourself to be someone who has had a life of great hardship and challenges. What's really occurring there is that all those points of view are included within your awareness. That's all. So that has to be the beginning of the realization, that all of those are just points of view included within your awareness, just like the stars are included in the sky. And just like you couldn't say this star is better than that star, you wouldn't say the happy points of view about your life are better than the negative points of view. It's simply that all points of view are included within awareness, period. That this is totally simple, totally simple. And it's a tremendous relief, because when we no longer have to take all of our emotional states to be who we are, it is just so incredibly freeing. When I woke up, I had taken myself to be a big fat story, you know, that was an accumulation of points of view. It was like the endless saga of being someone. And so I had accumulated all these points of view and taken them to be myself. All my thoughts, I thought that's who I was. All of my emotional states, I thought that's who I was. And by the time I was in my late 20s, I felt overwhelmed by this accumulation, because by then I'd had many emotional states and many thoughts, and I could see that no matter how good I tried to be, I had a lot of thoughts and emotional states that didn't fit into the category of good, virtuous, or perfect. I simply had all kinds of emotional states and all kinds of thoughts and all kinds of sensations too. You know, say you grow up with all kinds of points of view that say, well, you know, you get married like I did, and then you have sex with your husband and you never feel any desire for anyone else. Well, you know, anyone who's in this room and breathing knows that that isn't the way it works, right? You know, all these points of view are included and contained within us. And if we try to put any clamps or limitations on any of them, they just jump up with some kind of immensity of power, like a big ogre, you know, that we just don't know what to do about it, other than, you know, take a drink or whatever our strategy might be. But, you know, taking a drink, really, and going to satsang endlessly for decades are very equivalent if we're not resting naturally. You know, going to satsang for decades and never resting naturally, realizing that all our points of view are included and contained within us, is no different than going to the corner bar and getting loaded. We have to come to terms with the reality of who we are. And the reality of who we are is right here or right there, you know, in each of those chairs. And it is inclusive of everything. This idea of non-duality that says it's inclusive of everything isn't just cheap talk. You know, where we say it's inclusive of everything, but then we say these are good points of view and those are bad points of view. These are good ways of acting and these are bad ways of acting. Wherever freedom has been taught in this truly impeccable way, it's been taught as uncontrived conduct. That means there's no conduct that has to be contrived in order for one to be free. So we start with that all these points of view that we've taken ourselves to be, all our countless thoughts of every conceivable kind, positive, neutral, and negative, and we've all had them. If we say we haven't had them, we're in a state of total denial, you know, we're in total denial. all emotional states, no matter what they are. And we've all had them, no matter what they are. Murderous impulses, you know, fantastic impulses, loving our children, hating our children, wanting to be with our children, wanting to split from our children and never see them again as long as we live. You know, we've all had these. To deny that we have is, it's stupid, you know. All these points of view, no matter what they are, they're naturally occurring and they're included and contained within us. If we try to force ourselves into some kind of small box of only having certain thoughts and emotional states or behaviors, all we're doing is creating more point of view. That isn't freedom, and it never has been. Timeless freedom is free in its own place. And its own place is without location and includes every single point of view. So you see, every single point of view, no matter what it is timelessly free. There's no special person who is timelessly free. Everyone is timelessly free. Already timelessly free. Timelessly free in all perceptions. Timelessly free is all emotional states. Timelessly free is all thoughts, no matter how horrendous or how cool. Timelessly free is all memories, the good memories, the bad memories, and the who cared memories. All was timelessly free. Timelessly free is a sick person, timelessly free is a well person, always timelessly free. Your name is Samarpand here, which means surrender. This is true surrender. True surrender, the surrender of all points of view. That's right. What I'm saying is that the awareness of a mad bomber, a serial killer, and the awareness of Amici and Mother Teresa are all the same awareness. That's what I'm saying. Especially for Westerners, sometimes the idea that all negative things are entirely free in their own place, are equally free, are equally pure, equally pristine, primordially perfect, seems impossible to grok, because Western culture is so based on opposites of good and bad. This is much easier for people from non-dual cultures to understand. So many times when people from the West hear about that all negative points of view, no matter what they are entirely free in their own place, it seems like it's some kind of license for immorality or irresponsibility. But it isn't. It's only through the realization that all of what we've called negative or opposite in any way, it's only in the realization as of that as primordially pure that we have true compassion for all beings, that we have the emanation of benefit that allows for everyone to be free so that there aren't any mad bombers. But as long as we have to parse and nuance everything into all these categories of good, bad, and neutral, that can't be the case. You see, we're beyond speculating anything about ourselves like good or bad. Who we really are is just beyond any kind of concept or characteristic that would be that limiting. But, you know, we can talk about this one and that one, like the mad bomber or whatever, but what we really have to do is just rest naturally ourselves, keep the focus entirely on ourselves. Because I'll tell you, there's a mad bomber in everyone. You know, there is a mad bomber in everyone. And when you realize that, it's great. It's just like, you know, we can point the finger at this one and that one, Hitler or George Bush or, you know, whoever it is. But if until we realize that we are George Bush and we are Hitler, we're not entirely free. You know, so all these perceptions, no matter what they are included and contained within us. We're our own Holocaust of whatever kind it is we can imagine. If we're gassing ourselves with all our points of view, then, you know, how is that different than these metaphors that appear from time to time? Auschwitz, Dachau, whatever it is. We exterminate our own life when we buy into a reality based on positive, neutral, and negative phenomenon. So, you know, the understandings that I'm talking about here, they can only be realized through natural rest. When we hear them, they have a ring of truth, but the more we rest naturally, the more we simply say, I experience awareness, you know. And that awareness is the root of everything that happens in my life. That's the constant. That's the starting point. And from that, it just becomes more and more obvious all the time that we are who we are. But, you know, if we're going to have faith in something, rather, we already have a tremendous amount of faith. Maybe we've put it, all our faith into points of view, but our faith is alive and well. When we put our faith in the magnificence of our own being and really taking that all the way, then we are Neo, you know. Neo means new, you know. We're fresh and new in every moment. Fresh and new and free in the immediacy of all our perceptions. You can say all kinds of things, you know, about awareness, but awareness is the essence of everything. So awareness is the essence of the spider with the web coming out of itself and back in. Awareness is the essence of silence. There would be no silence without awareness of silence. So awareness is the basic space. Simplicity. Keep it simple. Don't get lost in all the different descriptions of everything. The metaphors really that describe awareness are simple and they're timeless. There are certain metaphors that are just so keen on in terms of right on is another way to say that, in terms of describing the great reality, that in order for us to communicate it effortlessly from one human being to another, it's important to keep it simple, to keep the metaphors simple, and to rely on what is really true about ourselves, and that is that all these points of view, no matter what they are, they're included within awareness, just like the color blue is included in and inseparable from the sky. That all of it is one wholly positive basic space that only emanates benefit, and that the more we rest as awareness, we realize that benefit that's naturally occurring. We realize that benefit that's naturally occurring that is entirely non-doing on our part. It's just present, you know, it's innate, it's inherent. We were born with it, and we've lived with it all our lives. We've lived as it all our lives. Did you have something else, Michael?
Say you're sitting around and the point of view arises that I need to have a drink or something, I need to have a stiff drink. And in the immediacy of that, maybe it's a compulsive tendency, any addictive tendency, someone might have it, that may arise as a point of view. And suddenly you see it, you know, you see it freely, you sense the immediacy of that. Nature of that. So you're free in that, but then a few minutes later you go, but wow, it would really feel nice to actually have a drink. Do you know what I mean? Like you've actually pierced the illusion, but then you actually, whether it is a conscious thought that you might say, well, no, I really actually enjoy that. But you've the compulsivity of it that would prepare you towards it as a point of view. Sort of seen through, but then you still make a choice that'd be really enjoyable.
Why speculate? Wait till it comes up and see what happens. Now, you know, I used to overenjoy cocktails immensely. In fact, the more my life didn't work, the more I overenjoyed cocktails. I can tell you all that. And I tried all kinds of ways to stop cocktailing, you know. Well, I'd only have 2 drinks, or I'd only have 5 drinks, or I'd only drink on Saturday, or I'd only drink after 5 o'clock, or I'd only drink after noon, or I'd only drink after 6 a.m., or, you know, whatever. Or I'd only drink 24 hours a day every other day, or whatever it was. But none of my strategies ever worked. And, you know, I felt that, and I did have a lot of capacities, intellectual capacities, willpower, so to speak, but I could never get a handle on this, no matter what kind of antidote I applied to it. Well, the moment I woke up, I never had another cocktail, you know, I just didn't. But that doesn't mean that everyone who wakes up stops drinking or whatever it is. In my case, it was what it was and is. It was like, well, you know, now I see why I wanted to find a way out. I always had this urge to freedom. And that was one of my strategies. But, you know, once I was entirely free, I just had no need to try to get free through some kind of antidote. Yeah, I know you like those hypotheticals. They're all free too. Intellectual speculation is entirely free too. Just don't let it limit you from being who you are. In meditation, what I will say about that is that in meditation, unless we're resting naturally in the posture and form of meditation, then we'll never be free through meditation. So if we're meditating And we have an object of our focus in meditation, like a candle flame or a deity or, you know, whatever it is, then we're in a point of view about freedom. That will never lead to freedom. It'll just lead to some idea of freedom, some kind of state of relief. But it isn't going to be complete freedom. If we want to sit quietly, and while we're sitting quietly, we notice that we're already free in each perception as awareness. So that awareness is perception. We realize that more and more. We sit quietly. We see that all points of view are included and contained within us. We sit quietly. We notice that as each perception arises, it's included within awareness. We notice that when it vanishes naturally, leaving no trace. We'll see that meditation then we're engaging in whether we're waking, dreaming, or sleeping. It doesn't matter what we're doing. We don't have to put ourselves in a special posture to do so. So in this way, we could call resting naturally in the immediacy of each perception complete meditative stability. I'm free whether I meditate or not. That's in the same way I'm free whether I'm swimming or not, you know, or eating or not, or whatever it is. There's no special conduct required to be totally free.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I've done 2 days of pestilence, really sitting to focus on the drink, which I presume would be as similar to focus on mm-hmm. the drink thing. And at the end of the 2 days, I feel much freer in myself, much lighter, much clearer. So I'm suggesting some of the time is a waste of time, and the other time is, to me, it's when I'm aware of the breath, that's when the rest of me is being. And that's when the growth is taking place. And you're suggesting that when you're looking at a candle, it's
let's together use a little discernment to look into that, okay? We'll just use the most minimal discernment. Pardon? Well, you know, when we rest naturally in the immediacy of each perception, we have growing discernment. That means we can see through everything in a laser-like way. So say that what we really want out of our meditation is complete freedom or enlightenment. Then the first question we have to ask about our meditation is, how many people who have meditated this way have become entirely free? And then when we look at the form of meditation and we see that very few people have become free through those means, then why would we want to do it anymore? So you see, this is what I mean about discernment. So then we start to look for the meditations that have freed up the most people. And when we do so, what we find is that the meditation that has freed up the most people is resting naturally in the immediacy of every perception. And that doesn't require any particular pose. You know, if we're sitting and we're focusing on our thoughts and feelings that come up or our breath, awareness is primary in all those experiences. So the great relief comes in awareness, not in awareness of the experience. If we more over and over again force ourselves into the awareness of a certain experience, like awareness of a candle flame, awareness of a candle flame, awareness of a candle flame, awareness of the breath, awareness of thought, you know, whatever it is, what we've really done is hypnotize ourselves. We've hypnotized ourselves into a state, a bodily state, but it's not freedom. If it were freedom, then when we left the meditation session, we'd be free the rest of the day, you know, in all our perceptions. But what occurs is that we might feel this increasing freedom during a long retreat, But everyone I've ever talked to, they all say the same thing. I go home, and then, you know, by Wednesday or a couple weeks later, I can't even remember what that was like to feel so free. So, you know, we want to do what'll work. And when we apply a little bit of discernment to everything, then we see that just like we'd be a good consumer in buying a car or a TV set, we'd want to get a good car, a good TV set. We'd want to make sure we had customer service for whatever we bought and a warranty and all that. We apply the same kind of discrimination to what's more important than anything, freedom. We look for the reality of it being available. And we know that it's available because we see many people in that circumstance who are totally free. So you see this, if we want to be a really good consumer of when we're looking for freedom, awakening, enlightenment, whatever we want to call it, then we have to make sure we find the kind of means that have, skillful means that have worked the most often. And it's always been this, freedom and immediate perception. Throughout human history, this has been the most direct route. It's called direct perception of ultimate reality. The only direct perception of ultimate reality there is the one that is direct perception of that ultimate reality in every single perception, as that perception. At first it seems like there's awareness in the perception, but then they just blend into one. You know, it's realized that there's only awareness as that perception. You understand?
Are you familiar with Laya Yoga, Laya Meditation?
With?
Meditation, Laya Yoga. Because I've been, I know it's a long expression, trying to rest naturally, but when I'm resting naturally, I'd say, if I'm not reacting to those points of view, I find very often I get this, almost like a buzz, like a sound. But it makes me much lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've practiced a little bit of Laya. They talk about that technique. Talks about this, just following this sound. It's like tinnitus, kind of. What I imagine tinnitus to be like when you're in the ear. A noisy night at a gig or whatever. Do you have anything to say about that kind of noise?
I do. Awareness is primary in that noise, you know. It all comes back to awareness, aware basic space. It's so simple. It's so simple.
Just for the topic of meditation, because I'm a big meditator, and our guru teaches what he says is a unique method of objectless meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely resting, which is really intriguing that we found him and have come to his teaching because it's so synonymous. He also talks about the, I think I mentioned the other day, the sense of the purification of, if you use your language, the points of view, or the ultimate cessation of the boiling mud, if you like, the ripples that could cause the awareness to be drawn, or the energy to be dissipated into that. And he says, I guess through that, through the discipline of practicing, you know, you're saying just do it in everyday life, and that's great, but he's saying by actually really harnessing all your energy to do it as a meditation, maybe he calls it a purification process. Uh-huh. Maybe quickening that process or something. I don't know what you just wanted to know what you thought, maybe on that. Because it's really exactly the same, what he's saying. Just that sense of the ultimate cessation. You can tell me to stop speculating. I was just wondering where the, you know, because, it's, you know, we've taken a lot, obviously, from that and seem to have. Yeah, just that sense of that purification process, or the ultimate cessation of the energy dissipating from the view. He says it all is, you know, ultimately contained within awareness rather than, it's like Christ said, maybe, and from here you'll go out no more. Man, maybe that's the...
Well, I don't know. I just don't know. All I can say is keep the focus on yourself, rest naturally, and use your discrimination. You know, if you're involved in something, see how many people are really totally free there. That's all. It's really very simple. It's so simple. Are there any other questions? Or?
I look forward to sleep, like, because I think when you forget in sleep, when you forget the breath, you're very happy. When the breath, you are aware, you become more aware, but the breath, you have forgotten the breath. So you are so happy then. But when you wake up and this whatever you call is forced upon you, and is it by the small gaps that increase, you are still in a kind of aware sleep, but you're still aware of even of waking. Do you feel the same?
No. Awareness is pervasive of all bodily states, waking, dreaming, and sleeping. The more we rest naturally, the more we're aware 24/7, including in dreams and sleep. This is the beauty of natural rest. Nothing's left out. We'll sit quietly for a few minutes before we end.